Yeah, so do you think they fought like the skeleton army fully erect? You know, like they're expecting a bunch of babes, you know, like, hey bro, bring on the women. Hello, hello. This is Robert Thompson, and I'm here with Joe and Lars as their guest.
Hey, thanks for coming on the
Can
show.
you tell us the name of the show?
The show is the first podcast.
Yes.
There we go.
Thank you
All
for getting that
right.
correct.
Does that not happen a lot?
Our last guest was like, I have no idea what show I'm on.
You
And
know,
yeah.
in their fairness, they thought it was T1 podcast, which is close. We
No, that
that
was
was
Mariev. The person after that just was like, I have no idea what the name of the show is. So you got a C plus, which is
Who was
better
that?
than
Thank
some of the
you.
other grades that people have
Yeah,
gotten.
I
Don't
don't
worry.
know. So that was good. And you got our names
So
right.
yeah, also, well, they're Lars and Joe. I mean, they're not like the most complicated ones in the world, so don't praise them too much, but you know. Robert, can you tell us a little bit, first of all, about who you are and what you do?
Well, my name is Robert Thompson, and I do stand-up comedy, playing a band, Dig Neptune and the Rusties. But I play different people. You know, the Dig Neptune moniker just travels with me. But it's very fun kind of music, a lot of theatrics and stuff. So the comedy, and I'm just the absurdist goofball. So it kind of, no matter what I do, if I became an author, the absurdist would come out. You know, it's just the tint of everything I do. But yeah, music, puppeteer, I eat a lot of carbs, probably have prediabetes. That's me. Hear me roar.
What are your favorite carbs to consume?
Oh God, if I could just eat fried dough all day, like just a giant slob of fried dough.
Well, you can. It's maybe not advisable.
Well, yeah, I'm no nutrition, but that's what I hear. No, man, I don't know, pizza. I love deep dish pizza, Chicago pizza. It'll like clog your arteries, and but you'll die a slow and painful, delicious death with the deep dish pizza. Yeah,
At least you know what you're getting.
that's right.
That's the way I
That's
want to go
right.
out. Yeah.
You know, you can't really eat cancer, you know.
Anyway,
yeah. One day.
yeah, not
Yeah.
yet. Not yet, at least. So, one of the reasons that we kind of initially wanted to do this episode is because when we were kind of talking about what to do for it, we noted that we've done a lot of bad movie reviews, and you were like, oh, yeah, that's kind of my thing. So, we wanted to actually talk today about a particularly bad movie that we all kind of gravitated towards when we were discussing which one to talk about. And that's
This is a movie that is
a
especially
name that
bad.
I cannot possibly pronounce. It's a Turkish name. I'm not even going to try. I feel like it'd be offensive if I did, but the literal translation is The Man Who Saved the World, but it's also known colloquially. That's not how you pronounce that word.
Colloquially.
Colloquially.
I catch your jab. I get what you're saying.
It's known as Turkish Star Wars, and the reason for that is because about probably 50% of the movie is just straight up lifted clips from Star Wars Episode 4 and mixed with the Turkish film. I say that very liberally. It's a thing where
Yeah.
stuff happens on film. I guess it's a movie.
This is an
I don't know.
especially awful film.
And yeah,
Is
go
it
ahead, Joe.
okay if I preface it with like I feel like one sentence how like to sum it up, I guess.
Sure.
This is how I would preface this film. This is how I would want to frame it. The costumes are horrible. The special effects are a monstrosity. And it's a movie that makes you regret that you've decided to watch it from the very first second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really like, okay, so we've reviewed some bad movies on this podcast before, and one of them was Troll 2, which was just yeah.
Oh, Troll, you gotta do Troll 2, man. That's like, That is definitely a landmark bad film.
And
sure.
Why wouldn't Troll you call 2? It Troll 2 when the stars of the films are goblins?
So we did that with Chelsea Sanders of the Stupid Sequels podcast, and then we actually had her return for a movie that, don't get me wrong, Turkish Star Wars is abysmal. It's awful. But I will say that Shark Exorcist, I still think, is like the worst movie I've ever seen.
Really? That's a bold statement. So you'd say it's
it is. Yeah, you can check my Letterboxd account. I've seen probably, what, at least 700 films at this point. I'm kind of a movie buff.
Would you say that it is the algae on the bottom of the barrel?
Yeah, I would say like the crud that's kind of like below the barrel itself. Yeah,
or maybe no, because that at least like serves a point.
This Turkish Star Wars didn't change my mind about Shark Exorcist being the worst movie, although it really gives it a lot of competition. I would say it's I hate it for very different reasons. And when I say hate, I don't mean like grr hate. I mean like just kind of amused, kind of annoyance at the movie. It's
disimpassioned.
What? No, passionate. Yeah. Like dislike of it for sure.
Like,
is it is intentionally bad, or is it like tongue in cheek, or it just they made an honest what they thought was a great movie and it was just terrible?
I think the stuff that they used for their own footage was trying to be good. I did get that impression. I don't think it was like a troll fic, and a troll film. And I don't mean that like troll or troll 2. I mean, like, I don't think they were trying to trick us like, look at this movie. We actually made it intentionally like that. Like, I don't think that was what I got from it, but I can see why someone would think that, because it just cuts so many corners, and it's the action scenes are just so horrendously both over the top and underwhelming at the same time. That maybe in an alternate universe, maybe it actually was intentional. Although I do think they went off to make another film in this series. I think it was called Turks in Space. So I kind of feel like the fact that there was a sequel kind of counts against that. But, you know, really?
Turks in Space.
Let's actually talk about the movie, though. Joe, you want to?
No, let's just talk about the meta level surrounding it.
Well, I want to talk about some specific scenes in the movie that were.
No. Let's just talk about the surrounding details.
See, he doesn't want to get into it because it was so bad.
Well, where should we start?
Well, we should start with Star Wars Episode 4, which it occupies most of the lengthy intro of the movie. It's basically just this guy named Murat, I think is his name. And he puts himself in front of a green screen in which the back of it is the Death Star scene from the climax of Star Wars 4, pretty much in its entirety, probably about 3 or 4 times. And yeah, they kind of waffle on about a bunch of nonsense, and it's just like a ton of exposition, but it's not particularly meaningful exposition. It's just kind of people are doing stuff and they're exploring space. Did you get anything out of that I did not, Joe or Robert?
I would agree that stuff just happens.
Yeah, I don't know, man. This could be like, it's one of those things where I feel like maybe there's some like Lynchian quality to it. Like maybe they know what they're doing and they just, you know, they don't, it's not as literal, you know, maybe.
Yeah.
That's me giving them too much credit, but yeah, it is definitely a bunch of horseshit. They just steal. They literally steal scenes from Star Wars and green. And so they had the copyright laws don't work in Turkey, or what, like how does that work?
Oh, do you want to know why this happened? Because I actually did some deep dive research on this. There is a reason why they use that.
I thought that they had acquired the rights naturally.
No. So what happened is they did a bunch of original footage, and basically the studio wasn't pleased with it. And this was, I think, about 2 weeks before it was due to be released, either 2 months or 2 weeks. And they had already blown the budget on that completely, so they couldn't afford any reshoots. So I mean, it's Turkey. They're not. I'm trying to get my head into the minds of the creators here. Maybe they think that they're far enough removed from American cinema geographically that they thought, oh, we could kind of get away with stealing this copy of Star Wars 4 and kind of splicing the scenes in. But basically, that's what they did, is they spliced the scenes in. And that's just me kind of thinking why they may have chosen to do that.
Yes, their studio was not pleased, but they passed on a gem. You know, they really, not passed on a gem. They approved it. They greenlit a total gem here. I love the intro with the. I noticed there's a. Mm-hmm. Is it the robot from Lost in Space? That old 60s show.
Oh yeah, the Indiana Jones music starts playing at a certain point and is used liberally throughout the film. Just could be because I guess they weren't able to hire a composer.
Well, I'm sure John Williams. I'm sure John Williams gave him okay, right?
and I'm sure he regretted to have to miss that. Basically, this entire intro is just a giant middle finger to the concept of show don't tell. It's just a bunch of tell. That's all it is. And also, what I started to notice is that the editing is really jarring and disjointed. This entire movie, like, you know, the way that naturally cinema video scenes kind of transition towards each other, there's none of that. Scenes just like abruptly end, sometimes right in the middle of them, and
things just start so suddenly, instantaneously. It's a new scene with no setup. No transition.
I kind of created this character in my head who I call Tony, who is the sound designer, and I just imagine like the different things that like the boss is yelling at Tony to do. He's like, like, hey, Tony, why don't you just, like, randomly intersperse clips from the climax of Star Wars 4? And then he kind of has to do it, but he has to do it convincingly with the audio, and he doesn't know how. So it's just kind of chaos. And so let's move past the intro, because that's enough about that.
Actually, there is one last thing I want to say about the intro.
Oh, sure.
It reminded me, at first I thought it was nice. It was a montage. We're talking about the... I'm talking like the title screen where the names glide across the screen, and there were vines, I think. Like, I'm at an Italian restaurant with vines painted on the walls, and it was very nice. And then the
no,
names kept coming, and the music was still very nice.
No, it wasn't.
I was actually watching. It with my.
Well, you know what? Okay, that's your opinion. That's fine. That's fine.
Well, this is just what I thought for the first second. I was being very optimistic. And then my brother Jeff was there, and he says, I love this movie already. It speaks to my heart.
Oh.
Not really. He's being...
Oh, okay. I was going to say, do you love your brother Jeff anymore? Because he said that, but if he's being sarcastic.
Yeah, he's joking. But
okay.
At first, it was a very misleading, sort of a good first impression. Like,
I guess,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, the names glide over too quickly, and there are things that are off, but it's got charm in the first moment.
I completely disagree, but that is completely you're right.
I think we're going to agree for the rest of the movie though.
So they crash land on this it actually shows their ship being destroyed, but it turns out that it wasn't later. Spoilers.
Well, something has to happen for there to be spoilers.
Yeah, they crash land on a desert island, and there's still a bunch of explosions. There's just, like, a lot of things going on. Like, they're just, like, kind of coming up from the rubble and the sand, and there's still a bunch of explosions, and it's just really jarring. And, they survived, and they get up, and you get a taste of the dialogue in this movie where one of them says, where are we? And then one says, I don't know. And that's about as complicated as it gets.
I love the minimalist approach they took to the dialogue.
Really minimalist, like just like basic bitch kind of minimalist, kind of just kind of not dialogue, just words.
A lot of the time, they're staring at each other like they're aliens that have like telepathy.
That would actually make a lot of the scenes make sense.
There's no way that's what they were actually going for.
By the way, this next scene is something where it establishes this weird kind of 80s kind of toxic machismo kind of macho vibe to the main characters the entire time, where they're like, well, I wonder if this entire planet is inhabited by women. So let's do our wolf whistle. to get them to come out. And instead, they attract the skeleton army on their horses.
Yeah, so do you think they fought, like, the skeleton army fully erect? You know, like, they're expecting a bunch of babes, you know? Like, hey, bro, bring on the women. I don't know. I'm sorry. I do have some Turkish friends, and I cannot do a proper impression. Let's just...
A proper impression of a Turkish erection? Or
well, I know what you mean. It's like one of those... It's one of those accents that it's just kind of like a husky, but like you don't want to like mimic it, you know. Like I've heard the accent,
vague Eastern European-ish kind of, you know,
almost Ukrainian,
almost but not, yeah. And so I think at this point, by the way, during this scene, I think it is we established that the sound director like actively hates the audience. It's just like they keep repeating the same audio clip over and over again. It's awful. It's like the director was like, "Hey, Tony, make it like a Holocaust for their ears. Just make it just like just awful to listen to at all times." And by the way, I listened to this with headphones, which was a mistake. I really shouldn't have done that. It's a little bit easier when you don't, but still pretty bad. Somehow they just dismount everyone. They win the fight against hundreds of skeleton horsemen. I don't know. And Indiana Jones music is playing while they do, of course.
I think it's that machismo you're talking about. It definitely, yeah, it fueled them to defeat the skeleton army, you know, and
yeah,
having raging Turkish hard-ons, I think, also.
Raging Turkish hard-ons, band name called it.
Yeah.
So, and then we get a shot of some characters which will show up later, but for some reason they just pop up, which are these, like, random devil people in masks where they go, ah... And I think it's supposed to be like a jump scare or something, but they just kind of ride past them.
I think that was actually Tweakers, right? They're in San Bernardino.
You think that they were just like people who were there and they're like, let's throw this in?
Yeah, there was no masks used.
Yeah.
In that.
And then they get shot off their horses by some cyber soldiers.
Yeah, cyber knights, or whatever those guys are. Like,
yeah, and then... thousands of people show up.
At some point, the main character describes one of the enemies as sour-faced, which really stood out to me. Like, he just ate a lemon, and now he's sour-faced.
Yeah, that was the only metaphor in the entire movie. The rest of it is just much more basic. So, like, that's clever dialogue for them.
Yeah.
And then they're invited to... well, not invited. They were forced into this gladiator-esque death game where, like, you know, if you win, you survive. If you lose... you die. And for this scene, it seemed to me like the sound designer had never heard a weapon before and he had to guess. So it's this weird, like, clinking noise that doesn't actually sound like any actual weapon in existence. And a robot starts strangling a child just randomly.
Yep.
And after observing this slaughter for several minutes, they actually engage. The choreography in this movie, by the way, which ensues here, is... do you guys have a word to even describe it?
Describe the insanity?
Insanity.
I think the director's son was playing with action figures, and it was a groundbreaking way to do things. You know, it'd be like, all right, son, play with toy. I don't know. maybe that's what it was. Because, yeah, there isn't a lot of sense to the...
Yeah, he just kind of mimics how his son plays with the toys. That's a good theory. Yeah.
That's how they did Fairly Odd Parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're captured suddenly, and then they escape suddenly, and then they find this blonde lady who is one of the most important characters in the movie. She has an orphanage, and there's a fire that was lit, and it's extremely loud. It's like they told the designer, hey, Tony, please remind the audience that there is fire by lambasting their ears with it every single second. And what we end up finding out is that this orphanage is right next to a mausoleum. And there are mummies, which attack all the kids and kill a lot of them. Like, it's really dark.
Is that when there was a random hand that reaches out of some gooey mashed potatoes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
So, yeah.
Basically, at this point in the movie, it looks exactly the same as Planet of the Apes, right? Are they outside for this?
No, this is when they're still in the caves.
Oh, did they discover the hieroglyphics?
I don't remember when that was, but I don't care. So The main character and the blonde girl.
I'm looking at mashed potatoes in my notes.
Fall in love. And the way that they show this is that the hero and the blonde girl just look at each other and then they smile, which is supposed to represent love or something. You guys notice that they did that a lot throughout the movie.
This was the first of at least 5 or 10 times, at least 5, at the very minimum, maybe 10 or more. Yep. Of just infinite staring,
mm-hmm.
No end in sight, no end to the staring, and then it doesn't end with anything. Like it's nope. Like they, it's like if this happened in real life, that you're really like you're staring in somebody's soul, like I don't know, but you would like something would happen. There's that much chemistry, you know.
Maybe the director's like Kubrick, where he intentionally antagonized the two dudes, you know, like just like. Kind of pin them against each other throughout filming. My favorite is the, those mashed potato guys that come out of the walls. That's what you meant, right? Those dudes?
I think so, yeah. The mashed potato hands?
Yeah.
I just remember that. Like,
there's like 12 people in costume. It's kind of amazing. Like, I don't know. Yeah, the costume design is pretty incredible. There's also that...
when you say incredible, do you mean...
You mean people in robes and jackets?
Yeah, I think it is pretty impressive, you know. I think if the human race is wiped out tomorrow, and this is, I hope that this is the only piece of evidence of us being alive.
This would be so dark if that was the case. So a couple details we actually learn about the movie at this point. One of them is that they're in a place called the Land of Infinity Full of Darkness. That's the name of the location. Just
so the Inland Empire, right?
Yeah. They're... Sorry, guys, if you're listening from there.
This movie's based in Riverside, right?
We don't have any listeners in the Inland Empire. I looked at it yesterday. We have not a one, I think, in the entire Inland Empire.
I might boost that up. That's I'm...
Okay.
I'm
from, we're putting them on the map.
The
worst way possible.
We're going to infiltrate a new market demographic.
Yeah. By the way, we actually find out that the main villain is apparently called the Wizard, and like he's kind of got a Darth Vader thing going on, but if you see his face without the helmet on, he looks like Leonidas from 300, so I kind of called him Darth Leonidas from now on. That's kind of my nickname for him.
Aha, uh-huh. That's good.
My nickname for this character, or any character that exhibits a leadership presence in an antagonistic role, because I can't keep track of like which one, but I call them... Vader inspired characters, resembling Vader.
During the mummy scenes, do you guys hear that where it was like, hey Tony, can you smash a cymbal really loudly every 3 seconds over all the audio? And so there was that was really pleasant. A bunch of kids die and it's quite like graphic. They just slash them to death,
not just in the movie. There was a terrible war going on, and they utilized the Civil War footage.
Yep.
In this, I have no idea.
No, they reuse a lot of footage. I wouldn't be surprised. So what ends up happening here is we come across a Sasquatch. He just kind of shows up.
Sassy Squatch?
And he slaughters like a bunch more people. And one kid makes it out alive. That's kind of like the main character's protege from now on, who there's some scenes with him later. But then, before we get to the best scene in the entire movie, Darth Leonidas, he has this like blood tube to be able to transform the dead children into more mummies. Was he like transfusing them with his blood, or what was going on with that?
Yeah, I don't know if as humans we're supposed to understand what Darth Leonidas is doing, but I think that is what he's doing, but I just love that giant silly straw drain the blood.
Yep.
At one point, the Darth Vader equivalent says, "The galaxy is my immortal era." Which is it? Immortal or an era? You dumb fuck.
Yeah.
That was my notes that I wrote.
And then comes the scene, which I actually genuinely found amusing, but for this, the ways that the director did not intend at all, which was the epic training montage.
Oh, dude, that is this movie. I think that the training montage encompasses like life itself, you know, like this is, or just the this movie, you know, yeah, it probably should have never been made.
Nope.
You know, like, yeah, we're doing a shit movie. We're going to pile through. We're going to do this. Turkish Star Wars is going to be seen. It's kind of like a Motivation Monday, you know, it's a motivational.
Sure.
Yeah. And I'm glad that, you know, 55-year-old man has all that power, but I don't want to. Yeah. Sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off there. I'm very passionate about that scene too. I'm a big fan.
Yeah. We're all fans of that.
It's the only decent scene in the whole movie.
Although it's just like we're laughing at it though. Like, I mean, it's mostly just him slapping rocks. I mean, it's
yeah.
And then another guy's that way, but he hitting the sand. Most of the training is slapping and hitting and tickling and karate chopping rocks, basically.
As if to say at the beginning, he knows no better technique than to slap, like a child slaps a rock. Yeah. Who doesn't know how to fight.
It's a yeah. very idiosyncratic way of slapping it, too.
He's
it's
an
like
astronaut.
A smack.
He's like traveling through space and like yep. surviving on his own, like fending, you know. Oh, it makes no sense. Why would he be slapping rocks?
I don't know.
Wimpy,
he can kick a rock
wimpy
like
slaps.
No one else.
At the end of it, there's a really unfortunate scene where it's supposed to represent like the success of his training, where he's like supposed to chop a rock in half, but they get this close up of him where like the actor clearly needs to sneeze. Like he's like scrunching up his nose in that awkward thing where.
Yeah. And I, that was yeah. weird.
I guess they were running behind
a lot of dust.
And then he was just like, and then he
yeah.
He slaps the rock and it, you know, torn asunder. And that's the end of his training, I guess. And then
well, at this point, he's not slapping the rocks anymore. He's karate chopping them. Like he's progressed so
he's
much.
He's learned that that's not very effective.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like every clip is him learning more and more until the end where he's able to chop the rock in half.
But then they forgot that they were done with the training, so they have just like 2 more minutes of it, and he ties boulders to his shins, and he jumps around on them like a kangaroo. And
like he's on a pogo stick.
And by the way, this would destroy your shins, even if you could attach boulders to them. If you were hopping around like a goon on them, I mean, that would be the end of your shins.
Like a goofy goober.
Yeah. I know, it's like moon shoes for him, those boulders.
They are, because he knows how to really, like, jump really high afterwards. And that's a major power that he's given from that, is super jumping. He uses it a lot for the rest of the movie. And then Joe, there's another scene where they fall in love.
Yeah, so I think this was the part where they, again, make infinite eye contact. And they're washing each other's hands, right?
Yep.
And there's like a clay or a silt in the water, and you know, they're just like a Play-Doh or something. Delish. They're just washing each other's hands.
And then they finish the day with a meal of fried insect and boiled snake, which is like he rightfully says that it's disgusting. That's the only time I've agreed with character. Then Darth Leonidas makes some actual zombies because he can just kind of do that. Then the kiss, not Darth Leonidas and the zombies. Yeah. I meant like. The main dude in the chick.
He kisses her on the nose.
And then they actually kiss, but she doesn't close her eyes because she's like a psychopath or something. Like, did you guys notice that? She doesn't close her eyes. It was so weird.
Yeah, it is pretty creepy.
Yep.
It's just this, yeah, I don't know. I think she's maybe fixated on his hair. I don't know if you guys are confused. I thought his hair was going to change color. Like at the beginning of the movie, when he shows up, when they arrive, I thought it was just dirt in his hair.
I thought you were going to say, like, oh, he goes Super Saiyan or something. No, okay. Yeah, because it's a very dirty gray, I guess. That makes sense.
Yeah, like, they bought it at Party City, you know, like the gray dye.
Mm-hmm. And then they're walking over to the cantina, but it's, like, a large group of people. And so I guess they told the director, hey, Tony, make loud scraping noises so we know people are walking. And then they walk into the cantina, which is directly ripped from Star Wars.
Just, was that?
Yeah. Well, it's interspersed with the tweakers, like shots of them just kind of popping up.
Yeah, some of them look like Yo Gabba Gabba characters. In like a bootleg, mm-hmm. you know, like it'd be like in Santa Ana and like some like Rio Rancho market. You know what I mean? Like Yo Gabba Gooba, you know. And then I love that. I love their characters. They're so innovative. Like woman with the 80s headband and.
They really stretch their imaginations on that one.
When the two main characters, the bros, I call them, were walking, there was actually one line of dialogue that really stood out. So they're talking about some girl where the main character is saying this to like the side character. It's like, did you ask her something? And then he says, no, she just realized the beauty of feeling. She realized that she's a human. Like, I hate that, you know, when you go to ask a girl out or something and she realizes she's a human and the beauty of feeling.
Yeah, that does suck.
The dialogue is so ridiculous. I can't even try to decipher what it means, which makes it very hard to keep track of what's going on because the dialogue's not reliable.
By the way, there's a lengthy fight scene that happens in the cantina. And he has this really unique fighting style, which I decided to call Krav Magoofy. Like, it's just like, it's mostly just him smacking enemies, not slapping or punching, but smacking, like, very specifically. Imagine, like, if you smack people. That's kind of his shtick. It's really unpleasant on the ears. So you guys remember when you were kids and you get, like, an empty paper towel roll, like the paper roll, and you'd go inside of it, and it would make that funny noise?
Mm-hmm.
Well, basically, they just had, like, the sound director be like, hey, Tony, can you play that over and over again for this guy? And that's kind of what happens. Like, a lot of the film from now on is just them playing the same audio clip over and over again.
I noticed that down the road. I made a note of that same noise somewhere else.
It's used a lot.
Yeah.
And
at some point, like, it stands out.
Yeah.
You're like, wait a second.
By the way, the rest of the movie... Like, we will definitely discuss it because there's some standout stuff. But this is kind of where it kind of all just gets lost and the excuse of a plot kind of disappears. And it's mainly just, like, several fighting scenes and that's about it. I mean, it really starts to drag here. And it's a movie that drags from moment one, but... The second half of the movie, Joe, you said you just kind of stopped taking notes at one point, right?
Yeah, there's a large section of the movie where nothing happens, and I'm just like there's basically an entire segment of my notes. At some point, I write, like, I do, like, a dash every time there's a new scene, and one of them is just, like, and then a whole bunch of, oh, it's in between the random brain out of nowhere. And then the Darth Vader equivalent talking about making people immortal. I don't know. What was that? 20 minutes in between there?
Yeah.
I just wrote, and a whole lot of nothing happens here. Because it's true. There's nothing to take notes on because...
Yeah, there's nothing really happens. But
Let's
skip to the point that actually happens next. Like, there's something that goes on. Which is that they go to a random Islamic shrine, and from here on out, the movie has, like, heavy religious themes. They start talking about Christianity and Islam and how, like, some...
I thought that it was pretty enlightening, though.
Yeah.
You know, like, Star Wars, you got the Force and all this mythical religion, but in this movie, they don't shy away from, you know... Christianity and
Islam and maybe they should have.
I think it's
because it's not.
I think it's because of their audience.
It's
for an audience that is very orthodox. Most of them.
Yeah, I don't know enough about Turkish religious practices to really comment on that. But that sounds like it'd be correct.
Funny now in Turkey they only believe in the Force.
Ah. So this movie's kind of outdated at this point.
This movie was like the
okay,
like the Book of Mormon for them.
Mm.
Yeah, they had Lucas come in and add the Force.
They had a pipe in the Force from Iraq, though.
The special edition of Turkey.
Because they didn't get it there. Iraq produces a surplus of the Force.
While they're by the way, at this point, the main character's like, oh, I need to go get this sword. And one of the worst sounding scenes in the entire movie comes up because this guy has a flail. And he spends like 30 seconds just like kind of flailing it around. And they clearly didn't have the audio for this. And I'm not sure there was an actual flail in that scene. Did you guys actually see it? Or was he just miming that?
I'm not sure if it was this scene, but it could have been. Where it seemed like something was missing. Like, the way he was behaving didn't match up with what was actually on the screen being recorded. And I was like, I think you're forgetting. Like, it was like, it was something he was supposed to be holding. So I think it is what you were talking about. Like, he was definitely miming it.
Exactly. And in the background, I think they were like, hey, Tony, can you kind of whistle to imitate the wind that this instrument would make? And so there's that.
But at this point in the movie, you just want it to end. You're like not really paying attention.
I wanted it to end so badly. I'm like, oh, just please make it stop.
Yeah, there's so many fight scenes and like high octane and you know, adrenaline, but then it just slows down and a lot of staring and Freddie Mercury's uncle is the henchman to Lord Vader.
Darth Vader, this guy. Yeah.
At one point.
Yeah.
So
just to interject real quick. At one point, and we might have passed this, but I think it's worth noting, the Darth Vader equivalent, he's talking about making people immortal in front of his staff, who are most likely all thinking, like, I'd like to be immortal, but if they said anything to that effect, they'd all be killed. So they're just, he's just like, we're going to make people immortal and this and that, and then they're just like, all right, I guess we're going to help you become immortal. Yeah.
Later, by the way, he renounces that and says he's going to kill the Earth.
I missed that because...
But, yeah. I don't know. Well, yeah, I understand.
You didn't catch that tiny piece of
If you watch
diamond.
The movie, it's just... By the way, he grabs a sword, which I cannot describe with, like, spoken words how ridiculous it looks. I think we need to include a link to that sword. Do you remember the golden sword?
Oh, yeah.
It's, like, imagine, like, the most D-list of props... Like, something from, like, a fourth-grade play production. Like, oh, this is a cool sword. But it made its way into the final movie. I don't know how they got away with, like, letting that prop exist. It's just
They had
so
to make
bad.
It day of because somebody forgot to bring the sword.
Yeah, oops. Yeah. Igor forgot sword again. All right, you better stop by 99 Ranch Market and, I love that there's so much to comment on this movie. I'm not trying to detract from anything, but that the props, the costumes, some of those guys do look like that's what happens to you if you masturbate too much, like those furry dudes or the hairy palm guys. It's just, yeah, it's like a warning. Maybe there's strong Christian or not just religious overtones, like, You better not to masturbate. This will happen to you.
I did get kind of a moralizing vibe from this movie.
Yeah.
But, like, subtly. Anyway, the lady that falls in love with the main character can talk now because he got the sword. And then now she can talk. So there's that. There's a lot of more religious exposition. And his homie dies. And there's a voodoo gorilla. But...
Oh, yeah.
The hero takes him out with one hit, so that's fine. That's
my favorite Hanna-Barbera cartoon, Voodoo Gorilla.
Voodoo Gorilla. And then he gets really upset because his friend just died, and he melts down the sword and the golden brain into power gauntlets and jumping boots to make it so that he can jump better.
I don't know, man. In times of sadness, you get real... I don't know. I think he's empowered by that.
Yeah.
He destroyed
the brain by mashing it like meatloaf. Just like massaging it like ground beef.
It's like Food Network for a minute.
And then everything suddenly had a blue tint.
Oh, yeah.
Everything was just blue.
The rest of the movie can kind of be summed up with... He goes and and he fights people, and everyone's head is now a grenade, and he decapitates Leonidas. I mean, that's kind of the rest of it. I mean, did you guys have any, like, specific observations from that point?
I have some observations from earlier.
Yeah, sure. It's not like the timeline matters at all, so go ahead.
Well, at one point, he does acrobatics. The main character does acrobatics through the air, and he just keeps jumping until he's in the middle of a battle scene himself. And then he kicks the monster, and the crowd is cheering, and they show it 5 times. They immediately rewind and show it another time, and then they rewind and they show it again, and then they do it again and again, and just from different angles, like, and then the enemies start chasing them and they run away, like in, have you guys seen European Vacation?
Yes.
Like when the German mob is chasing them out of town and they get their car stuck. That's exactly what it reminds me of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's, man, they borrowed from a lot of movies. European Vacation.
Borrowed? I mean, I think it's better stated as just straight up theft. But unless you're talking homage. About the themes. Yeah. An omelet to that movie, Joe.
And then I think in the very next scene, the hot nurse and the, is that the main character? Is that the same?
She was a nurse.
Originally she was a hot nurse, I think. The first time she makes an appearance.
Okay.
Blonde lady. But anyway, now they're locking eyes for like the 10th time. And at this point, my brother Jeff says, like, they've fallen in love for the first time again. which perfectly sums up their undying devotion and love for each other, like a dying star that cannot be extinguished. But it is very repetitive.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah.
Speaking of dying stars that cannot be extinguished, I mean, we should talk about our sponsor. We should actually do the ad read.
This is a good time.
Yeah, let's plug our sponsor. Yeah. Well, it's not,
that's,
but
that's
we've got
true.
To shoehorn
it
in
to,
there at
we
some
do have
point.
A sponsor we have to make happy.
Mint Mobile is our sponsor, a brand new one. Well, not brand new at this point. It's been a couple of weeks, I think.
Can you send me the link or something? No,
I'll just go ahead and get into what I was going to get into that we talked about earlier, because they came out with a new promotion today. Basically, you probably heard us talk about Mint Mobile before. We've sung its praises, but today they actually changed their entire game, where they had original data plans that you would get on, but they've decided now, do you want 50% more data? Now you get
You just get 50% more data? For what? A higher price? Or?
No, it's the same price. They just decided that they could offer more data for the same price.
They just give you more data now?
Yes.
Good deal.
If you're asking what the catch is, or if that's what you're thinking, the catch is that you actually have to sign up for their service and use it, which is a very enjoyable thing to do. Mint Mobile offers ridiculously cheap cell phone plans, and they piggyback off of T-Mobile,
it's
reliable.
That's what I use.
Yeah. Their plans start at $15 a month, and they max out at $38 a month. That's the Mac Daddy package. That's the most expensive one that they have. And starting on January 29th, which it will be past that by the time this episode's released, you can get 50% more data just for signing up, and that's going to be it permanently. They're going to keep adding more data as often as they can. And if people wanted to check that out, Joe, the offer, how would they do that?
Well, there's a link they can go to. I'm going to give everyone a moment to take out your phones and go to this link. Let me know when you're ready, and then play the Jeopardy music. All right. And then you want to go to mint.t1podcast.com.
mint.t1podcast.com. Go ahead and check them out. You'll thank me later. Anyway, let's get back to it.
Sorry about that.
Oh, I'm not sorry. We got to make money somehow. Robert, do you have any final observations about any of the last kind of anything that happened in like the last 10, 20 minutes that we didn't get to? Or
The finale is pretty epic, but it's a little underwhelming because I feel like it's just there's so much monotony throughout the movie of like, you know, fights. Mm-hmm. There's just slow and then fight and slow. I think that whole that religious like scene just totally deflated the movie for me. Like my brain shut off after that, I think. I don't know. But I do love, I don't know, there's a lot of things about the movie that I thought was pretty interesting choices. Like, what is it? Darth Leonidas, his ability to summon his mask. He could just, I don't know what technology that is, or if that's like, you know, some sort of telekinetic thing, but his mask is just not on his face. And then it's on his face, very quickly. Which I thought was pretty amazing.
Isn't that just like a high level ability of Islam? Like, isn't that kind of an upgrade at a certain point?
Yeah, does Mint Mobile offer that? Because I wouldn't be surprised. Thank you for asking. Got a great deal there.
For more information on Mint Mobile, go to mint.t1podcast.com.
Thanks, Joe. That's awesome.
I'm signing me up right now, man. Oh,
great.
That's actually wonderful. No,
the finale scene, though. Oh, heck yeah. No, the finale, there's a... Those red dudes do like this little dance that killed me when they come out, and they're like, I don't know. It's just, it's amazing. I feel like they didn't see Star Wars, you know, they just,
yeah,
like they'd never seen it. And that's where, I mean, to be honest, like obviously there's a lot of like rules of filmmaking being broken here, but, there's some imagination there, where it's, you know, maybe like complete clusterfuck, and there's a lot of bad choices, but it is interesting. I love how there's decapitation in it too. A lot of decapitation. I just wonder like how often they had to make those suits for those henchmen dudes, and like what's in it for them? Why do those henchmen work for Lord Leonidas or Darth Leonidas, you know, like what do they get out of it? Like, do you think there's a good benefit plan? Like, I mean, you might die, you know, you get a high risk job.
I think they're slaves or something like,
oh, okay.
Or
maybe it's like control? A harem. Maybe they're his like sex concubines or whatever, or like, I don't know. I mean, it's not clear.
There's no reason to assume that
there's no point in the movie that actually answers that question, but it's a good one. I feel like I could ask those kind of questions about a lot in this movie, though. Like, I feel like if you actually try to break down the logical structure of it, it would just immediately crumble.
This movie was a lot longer than I wish it was.
Yeah, it's about an hour and 30 minutes longer than I wish it was.
And 29 minutes and 59 seconds.
Gosh.
I will say, though, that although there was a lot of sheer, like, just anxiety inside of me, like, oh, I want this to be done, I will say it was a little bit more entertaining than Shark Exorcist, like, just in how outlandish it was. I think it's a better movie than Shark Exorcist, which
I think it was a better movie, but it's like a 2 out of 10 instead of a 1 out of 10.
You gave it a 1? I would give Shark Exorcist a flat. Well,
I thought the scale started at 1. It was like a 1 to 10. They don't say a 0 to 10 scale.
No, I've never seen Shark Exorcist, but I feel like with bad movies, there's the ones that just are soul-suckingly bad, where you just feel like you feel like that's an hour and a half that felt like 4 hours they'll never get back, you know? But then there's some that still feel like they suck some life out of you, but there's something a little more enjoyable. In this movie, it is definitely something, you know?
Yeah,
it's definitely got a lot of pageantry and decapitation, and they did a lot of cocaine, Turkish cocaine, I think, while making this movie.
Some Turkish delight, yeah.
Do you guys know anything Turkish about cocaine? Like, filmmaker? Yeah, Turkish cocaine. Yeah. We must work really
it's
well.
It's a lot like Turkish coffee. Extremely strong.
I do feel like the timing of this movie when it came out, by the way, though, was an era of the world where cocaine was pretty common. So, like, that makes sense that it had that kind of high octane, kind of aggressive, like, hey, Tony, just fuck my shit up with the sound kind of stuff at all times, you know? As for scenes that you guys actually enjoyed, and I mean sincere enjoyment, not just like, this is so bad that it's somehow good. Is there anything that you felt was cinematically well done?
God, no.
No
way.
I have to say, nothing about this film for me was unironically good. I don't know if Robert would agree or not, though. Ian, do you have any thoughts?
I don't know. Well, see, I would say that, like, it's I don't know, even if I had never seen Star Wars, it would be pretty hilarious, yeah. You know, like, it's pretty entertaining. But yeah, it is, it gets to a point to where it, you know, it gets a little mind numbing there, but like,
yeah,
I think it's pretty amazing because there's some, like, there's enough going on where, like, by the way, I wonder how much footage, like, hit the cutting room floor. Like, how many hours
an hour
should take to edit?
An hour of footage, by the way, this is actual trivia. An hour of extra material, mostly fight scenes, was left on the floor.
Like, an hour. Wow.
Yeah. The original cut of the movie was 2 hours and 30 minutes.
That's a lot of fight scenes.
Which, it's already a lot of fight scenes. And it's, can you imagine, like,
adding an hour to this? 1/10 the amount of fight scenes.
Yeah.
And that would still be in the three figures.
I will give one point of credit to them, which Shark Exorcist did not have, which is that there actually was a basic three-part plot structure. It was not well handled, but it was structurally sound. Like, there was, you know, the intro, and then the lead up to the climax, the falling action, and then the redemption at the end. It's a story, which Shark Exorcist did not have. So that's, I give it a 1 for that, out of 100, I'd say.
I don't know, man. Yeah, I'd say, it's definitely entertaining. There's a certain charm to it that a lot of bad movies don't have. I mean, the way he defeats Lord Darth,
Voldemort,
Lord, but Darth Leonidas. I just love how they did the special effects of just showing half of his, like, when they splits him in half with the, you know, spoiler alert, guys, but
They didn't have the budget for the CGI. Did you catch that where they dimmed out half the screen on each side to show, like, his head split?
Yeah, you know what's great is this movie was made a year after Raiders of the Lost Ark, and it looks like it was made 40 years before.
That's where they got all the songs from, though. So yeah. You're like, oh, we should use that.
I did want to mention one last thing about when they're outside in the background when all the people are there and they're fighting. It looks like there's Teletubbies in the background. Brightly colored chubbies.
Oh, maybe.
Teletubbies? Like,
oh, I thought that's what they were going for.
And then the sound effect for the ray gun that Vader is shooting is the, that same clip. For the ray gun, it's not even shooting bullets, it's shooting a laser, but for some reason it's going like...
Yeah, the sound design in this movie is objectively bad. Like, and combined with the frenetic scenes, I would say that this is a movie that, if you are hungover, you should never watch. I feel like it would trigger something very easily.
Yeah, do you think they had seizure warnings at the theater in Turkey when they showed this?
I wonder if the Turkish Cinema Association is like super... I can't imagine they're super like sophisticated back then. It doesn't strike me as something where they'd have a lot of warnings.
I'd like to see what they're doing now, you know, if there's like a Turkish... you know, Turkish vice.
I heard they made 8 of these movies. Mm-hmm. It was a deal. This was one
or
of
Turkish
8.
Turkish Shark Exorcist or...
8 they made of 8? These types of movies. Yeah, there was like other ones they made, like Superman or whatever, I guess. But yeah, there were eight in total. And apparently the main character is this huge Turkish movie star. Huge star.
You can tell he was, you know, I'm sure that guy's like, him and Wilt Chamberlain probably have a record of, you know, sleeping with most women on the planet.
Oh, yeah. The salt of the earth kind of like heavy set Turkish broads that are, yeah, I can imagine he's got quite a few notches on the bedpost from them. And
funny thing, he looks the same today.
Identical.
Well, because he already looked like he was.
He was only 19 in that movie.
He was actually, he was 19. Yeah,
he just smoked since birth.
That was his first role. Straight out of Juilliard.
So, Robert, unless there's anything else you want to talk about with the movie, we'd like to give you a chance to, you know, at least plug kind of some of the stuff you've been doing and maybe any shows that are coming up or anything like that. My voice is kind of dying. I'm kind of sick, so I'm kind of trying to pass the buck over to you guys to talk for a little while.
Oh, yeah, no problem, man. Yeah, no, I loved, like, I mean, there's bad movies. I've seen plenty of bad movies, and they get soul-sucking, but that there's a certain charm to it. So it's enjoyable, yeah, but you definitely need to take some Dramamine, you know, to be able to withstand that without hurling. But I did puke a few times, but
same,
you know,
well, yeah.
a big deal.
Expected.
Yeah, but no, I'm yeah, doing a lot of comedy, getting back in the stand-up game and music. So yeah, Dick Neptune is you can find all the stuff I've been working on Instagram or wherever. And yeah, my comedy, I have I've been getting a lot of spots in Orange County and LA. Just look up Robert Thompson and Dick Neptune, and it'll encompass the whole world. Yeah, I do a lot of like sketch comedy too. Eagle Maniac, that's where a lot of the sketches that I'm involved in, that's on Instagram and stuff. But yeah, no, I'm working on a short film too, but not out yet. It's called Man Boy. Should be out in 50 years.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, maybe in 50 years we'll have you back
for
on to discuss
listeners
it.
Listeners who want to follow you on Instagram, where would they go to do that? What is your handle there?
Oh, there's Rob T Comedy.
Is that Rob the number two comedy?
Yeah.
Rob number two
okay.
comedy.
So basically it's jokes about poop. Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah.
We kind of have a tradition where if we interview a music guest and there's some sort of a unusual name to their project, or they have some sort of unusual name for their stage name, that we try to figure out what's going on behind it. And we did guess when it came to Flex Style. Joe, do you want to see if we can guess the reason for Dick Neptune?
Dick Neptune, yeah. Is it because you had a friend? And I'm going to take multiple guesses, at least a couple, I think. But was it a friend who was a dick and his name was Neptune?
Close.
Wait. Lars, what's your guess?
Okay. My guess is that he had an enemy who was a dick and his name was Neptune.
Or was it was that it?
If I was to take
another guess, is it that the god of water, Neptune, to you, there was like an inside joke amongst your friends that guy's a dick?
No. I mean, I could keep you guys guessing, but...
No, go ahead and spoil it. It's fine.
Yeah, well, so I do admire the assumptions, but, you know, yeah, it's far less interesting. There's really nothing, you know. My parents were murdered by, you know, Neptune and his dick, or, you know, not, but it was when I was a kid, like I would make fake bands in my head. Mm-hmm. Like I'd just write on a paper, oh, this is my band, you know. And originally, cause I'd played in a band, No Brainer, in high school and, far after, but we originally were called the Neptunes. And it was just, I thought it was a, I don't know, quirky, fun name. And we had different names. There's Skip Neptune, Dick Neptune. And after No Brainer finally stopped playing, because I was going to focus on comedy, it was a few years ago, I just went back to that. It was just kind of, it was just fucking around, and then the name stuck because it was Dick Neptune in the microwave ovens, which is just so silly and absurd.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is.
That's
totally
a goofy
ridiculous
Gabby name.
It's memorable. Oh yeah, there's no one. The great thing about it is no one has that no one else is that, you know? So I guess I have that, but I kind of like the persona and stuff behind it. Like it's, yeah, it adds some
that is a really good advantage when choosing a name. Is it taken? And if it's not, yeah, you should go for it always.
Yeah. Like just like, one of my favorite bands, no one else on the planet has that name. Yeah, no, they're a Christian group.
I'm going to have to censor that one. That's viral, but wow. Yes.
I'm sure there's someone else with that name, but they're very rich.
Their songs are stuff like, I just saw the gayest guy on earth, where they just like talk about like, they're really like disgusting of a band, but I think it's amusing.
It's totally on purpose. Yeah, it's just,
yeah.
And you got to think about that. This was like the 90s, like when they were doing that. So it's like, it was pretty, now I feel like people are definitely more.
Now people roll their eyes a little bit more.
Yeah. But they're also aware that like, cause then like a band like Pantera or something like that, if you played that at like, you know, people like you were definitely a weird kid if you're into like Marilyn Manson that scared people, you know? So like a band called, you know, there's a song called Van Fleuretards and just completely, I mean, The Simpsons was looked at as like, oh my, you let your kids watch The Simpsons. The Simpsons is extremely, you know, intelligent, hilarious, like Harvard guys wrote for that show. But yeah, like, you know, if like someone mooning someone in a cartoon was like totally horrific, so here's a band making songs about like, was that I hope you get AIDS or it was pretty, it's like when South Park came out, I'll never forget that, how amazing that was. And now it's kind of lot like, if I was a kid now and I watched South Park, it might be kind of tame like originally, but then it was like, wow, there's a piece of shit singing, you know, there's a piece of poo singing a Christmas song that was Mr. just Hankey. Completely amazing. Yeah.
By the way, I think Dick Neptune kind of sounds like a high ranking attorney, like Dick Neptune, attorney at law. Like I feel like that'd be kind of.
Yeah. It does, yeah. There's a certain weight to the name Dick, you know.
Well, it depends on whose Dick it is, but yeah, I mean
that's true. Well, the band now, it was Dick Neptune and the Microwave Ovens, and then the Microwave Ovens and I had a great run, but I started working with Evan Cassidy and his group, which were the Rusty Dicks, and we thought it was too much dickage going on, so we narrowed it to Dick Neptune and the Rusties, because that's too much schlong there for the world.
So it couldn't be like
it was either not enough or too much, and I think you're correct that it was too much.
You couldn't do Dick Neptune and Rusty Dick and the Microwaves.
Or just Dick,
like the Monty Python sketch.
I see why you guys went the way that you did. Yeah.
Oh, Dick, ham, eggs, and Dick. I don't like Dick. From the Spam song.
Okay.
Dude, Spam is great. That Turkish Spam.
Is that a thing?
No, but I would love to see it. I'll get a petition. We'll get a GoFundMe started. We'll get all the gang back. You know, Devil Mask.
You should. Yeah. You should give me 50% of your company. I'm a patent writer.
Oh, wow.
Let's say.
That's not true.
Let's say it's true.
Oh, okay.
Well, we have to say, you have to say, let's say, let's because say it's not. True. Let's not.
All right. I'm no patent writer.
Let's move on.
It's just a really good idea.
Let's go ahead and shout out our stuff, but I'd like to leave us with a haiku about the movie after that. Jerry, you want to take over?
If you like what you see and you want to see more, go on t1podcast.com. You can follow us at t1podcast. That's on Twitter. That's on Instagram. Our email is firstpodcastever@gmail.com. And if you want to support us on Patreon, go to patreon.com/t1podcast.
Make sure to join us on Discord as well. We talk to our fans on here. It's t1podcast.com. Go to the link section and click the Discord.
Or it'll save you some time. If you want to type it in, go to discord.gg/6DGZEW.
They're not going
to
remember that, Joe. Let's just move on.
I know, that's the game. I was doing a bit.
All right. So I'll leave us with the haiku. This is my kind of the summary of the movie. explosions, explosions, explosions. Explosions, loud noises, explosions. Loud noises, explosions, explosions.
Beautiful.